Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Waiting Warriors podcast, the show that brings you inspiring stories, meaningful conversations, and heartfelt insights from military spouses and significant others. It's been a while, but we are here to reconnect with you and continue our mission to share important military spouse stories and resources. As many of you know, it's been a challenging couple of years for me. Life took a very unexpected turn, and our son James was stillborn, and I had to take a step back to heal, grieve, and find my way through the storm. During this time, your support and understanding has meant the world to me, and I am deeply grateful for so many kind messages, your patience, and the love you've shown. Now, with a heart that's healing, though honestly never the same, I am excited to bring this podcast back, and I have plans to make it even better than before. I had done a dozen or so interviews before we lost James, and since the guests and the content were so good, I can't not publish them, but for my mental health, I'm not going to edit them the same as I normally would. So please forgive any mistakes, any little weird things. But I am excited for you to hear these amazing military spouses. And then season two of the Waiting Warriors podcast will be coming shortly. Enjoy the interview. Hey, Waiting Warriors out there, welcome to another week on the podcast. This week we have Anna Larson on the show with us. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here today.
We are happy to have you. So Anna has like quite the resume. So she did work 18 years of corporate marketing and program management, which I know is like that's quite a feat as a military spouse to like have that long of a career.
So yeah.
Claps to you.
Well, I got really lucky with the company I worked for.
That's good.
They allowed me to telecommute. And when I moved overseas and wasn't able to work, they put me on extended leave. And that was the only reason I was able to do that. But wow. Yeah.
That's a blessing.
Yes, very much.
Now, though, she's a solopreneur as a copyright and marketing strategist. She writes for the Association of Military Spouse Entrepreneurs and Army Wife Network, and is the director of operations for a military spouse founded nonprofit called Pink Warriors Angels of Texas, which I know, but I know some people involved in that as well. And that is like an awesome foundation
foundation, whatever you want to call it.
She's been a military spouse of 16 years and a mom of two. So welcome to the show. We are glad to have you. You have a lot of experience, obviously, 16 years, or you've just kind of been like sitting in one spot.
No, definitely not. Yeah. So when I met my spouse, he was taking a break from active duty. He had gotten out of active duty from his first marriage. Long story there. When we met, he wasn't a soldier. So it was very interesting. When we got serious, he was in the Guard, you know, but it's a little bit different, the National Guard. And if you're not familiar with Army or military life in general, then you don't really get a big taste of it unless they deploy. Mm-hmm. And so when we met, and he wasn't in the military. And then he said, I really miss it. It's like what I love. I want to go back. And I'm like, okay. I had no clue really what that meant. Now, 16 years later, we're getting ready to retire. And I know what it means.
Now you know what you signed up for.
Exactly.
Yes. Which is interesting because I feel like we get told that a ton as military spouses, like especially like the first deployment or the first PCS, like when we're going crazy or something, people are like, it's not a large population, but it has been said to military spouses, like, well, you know, you knew they were in the military. You knew what you were getting into. It's like,
No. I would say definitely until you've experienced it.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was established. I had a home, I owned a home. I had, I worked, and military life was a huge upheaval of my norm. I had no idea what it was going to bring. I love it. I grew to love it. It very much fits my lifestyle very well. I love to
Yeah.
travel, right? I like to move around. So every few years PCSing was no big deal to me in that sense. But, it's definitely not your 9 to 5 off to work back home kind of job schedule.
No,
So, yeah.
I don't even think it's close to 9 to 5. That's
It has been with this pandemic.
that, like 9 a.m. to 5 a.m. That
Well,
that's not
5 a.m. is
real
PT, so no, you have to just keep
good.
going.
Oh
It's
yeah, that's true.
around the clock, 24 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't make 9 to 5 work at all. At all. You mentioned like your love to travel and all that kind of stuff. Where have you guys been? I mean, you've been in for 16 years.
Yeah, so well, a number of places around the states. We were at Fort Huachuca in Arizona, Fort Campbell, Kentucky,
Yeah.
Fort Belvoir, Virginia, currently at Fort Hood, Texas. We spent a few years in Germany and Vilseck, which I loved, and traveled all over Europe from there. And then we had a special one-off assignment where we were attached to the State Department and sent to Kampala, Uganda. And so we were stationed in Africa for 2 years.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You
So that
don't
was interesting.
hear about that every day.
No, it was a unique, they were exploring whether one MOS could fit into another MOS, and the answer was no, but we had fun for the 2 years that we were exploring that.
Yeah. What was the, I mean, 'cause like I know so many people have questions, like especially newbies, about what it's like to live overseas, live in Japan, live in Germany, which I want to talk about in a minute. You were in Germany and then you traveled so far, but like you were in Africa. Like what was that like? 'Cause I'm assuming you're not just traveling Africa the way you would Europe. You know what I mean? Like when you're in Germany.
No, it was definitely different. So first of all, I think the biggest difference was we were not attached to a military base. We were part of the embassy community, but we lived on our own little compound surrounded by 10-foot high walls and razor wire. And
Yeah.
we had guard gates with the only keys to enter and exit our home. So we didn't even have keys to get in or out of our own, well, the house, but the property, I should say.
Right.
So they had to let us in and they had to let us out. And it was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like that. And so it was a very different environment. It was very hard to get around town. Traffic is horrific. Plus, they drive on the wrong side of the road or the other side of the road. Maybe that's not the wrong side.
Yeah.
The other side of the road. And there is no such thing as like traffic signals or lines on the road or stop signs, even. You just kind of go. So that was always an adventure. And so for to get embassy people were all over the city. So to get from one side of the city where I live to see a friend on the other side of the city could be up to a 4 hour drive. So you really were limited to the area that you lived in and the people that were there. So our community was very small. And, my kids aren't heading off to the park playing. We weren't taking the dog to the dog park. We weren't going for walks even up and down the street necessarily. So a very different lifestyle from what we were used to. That was probably the biggest one.
How do you cope with that, especially when a military spouse tactic to adapting to this life is to engage and like immerse yourself in the community and all that kind of stuff. How did you switch gears and what did coping and adapting look like for you?
Well, for us, we were very fortunate to have a full-time housekeeper who also acted as a nanny for me. So I was able to work at the US Embassy. I ended up working there, and that helped in terms of being able to be part of the embassy community and seeing people every day outside of my home. And then I'm a homeschool mom, but for those 2 years, both of my kids ended up going to international schools for that, just for partly for the international school experience, and their curriculum was really good. So that was very different too for my children to, they're used to being at home with mom and mom being their teacher, and now they're in the school system experience. And I think that was really good for them because the international schools are also not standard schools. So my daughter's swimming for half the day and they're going on adventures. And anyway, that was really fun for them. So that's kind of what it ended up looking like. It was just we did the best we could with the small community that we had. And then we did, once we got comfortable in our own space, we would take walks down to the local, well, I wouldn't even say local. It's like a maybe a two couple blocks away, and it was this patch of dirt, and it's where the Boda drivers would hang out. Bodas are like the motorcycle taxis, and there was people there that would vend food. So they'd make things like, there's a food called Rolex that they would make, which is rolled eggs in a tortilla, kind of with their chapati bread, which is their type of bread. And then they lived in these little metal shack hut things right there. I mean, no bathrooms, no kitchens, no real bedrooms. They were teeny tiny little shacks. So we got to know that community very well too, because we would go down there and we would buy some food from them and the talk to the Boda drivers. And and my part of that was having my nanny to help guide me. Her name was Miss Dorothy. So Miss Dorothy to help guide us through kind of that process. You know, what Ugandan life is really like when you're not a US citizen living on a compound. So,
How did that, do you feel like that impacted your kids and was like super eye-opening, or was it just kind of like a fun adventure
Well,
to?
they were little, so the impact for them, I think, was more the I mean, they were little. The thing I love about military kids is that they are so resilient and they make friends so easily, right? I mean, it didn't matter where we go. They didn't matter if they didn't speak the same language. It didn't matter what they looked like or their economic status. They were like best friends because they were the same age, right? Or both boys or both girls or whatever the case might be. So that's really what I saw there. I think the biggest, it wasn't so much as an impact on them, other than the fact that we did talk a lot about why they lived how they lived and why they their clothes looked the way they looked, and we would take down our hand-me-downs and give them to the children. And I think in that sense we had some impact on them understanding the disparity between economic levels and what that means, like in the long term. But more than anything, I think they just loved being around people that were kind and loving, and that's where we what we were doing and where we were at. So, yeah.
Well, and I love what you said, like kids just make friends with anybody their age or anybody, that's it's really just anybody their age, they don't have to speak the same language, and yet your kids just loved everybody. And I know, like, right now, race and everything is such a touchy subject, but I think that's a really cool aspect that some military kids get, is that you get to just,
Absolutely.
no, it's like there's no reason, unless it's taught, like, there's no reason to not love somebody. You just make friends, and it just becomes a, like, well, yeah, like they're my friend. You know what I mean? Just a.
Absolutely. And I think that military life really lends itself to that when you're allowed to travel to so many different cultures. You have a huge opportunity to just immerse yourself in someone else's way of doing things and figure out why they do it that way and why they love that. And in turn, I feel like we can learn to love that too and appreciate, if not love it, appreciate it, if that.
Were there some things that you took away from specifically like the Ugandan culture?
Well, we love chapati. Yeah, their food. Yes, we love chapati. They have these really cool brooms they're made out of like straw, but they're very wide and they sweep so well. And I'm like, why in the world do we not have these awesome brooms in the United States? Just little things like that that I really love. I think they're so respectful. of people. Very, very respectful. They do not, I was called Madame, like across the board. You know, if you don't, or auntie, if you don't know someone, you automatically provide a title of respect. You don't always see that everywhere you go. And then just like their joy for dancing and movement and life in general. We went to a number of cultural events, you know, and part of it is that's their show and what they do. But I saw it in daily life with Miss Dorothy. She would dance with my kids. We had a trampoline. We did PCS over there with a trampoline and set it up. And I've never seen an adult love to be on the trampoline as much as Miss Dorothy did. We also had a gardener that came part-time, and he was 6 foot, probably four, and he would get on the trampoline. Hilarious. I mean, just like this enormous man just jumping and just laughing and his arms in the air and just loving life. And I think that's something I definitely hope that I took away from them, just dancing too. Yeah.
I love that. So what about Germany? I mean, I've got to imagine that you weren't living on like a compound and you could walk out a little bit more. Although I know some places in Germany, like it's a little bit different, but what about the place you were at? How do you say it? Vilseck?
Vilseck. Yes.
Oh, really close.
Rose Barracks. It's called Rose Barracks is the actual military base, but Vilseck is the small town near it. So Germany was one of those duty stations that I cried buckets of tears when I had to leave. I could have stayed there another 5 years and been very, very happy there. We lived on post, but there's just something about European life that they're so relaxed, and they really enjoy it. They enjoy the finer things, I guess, in life. So I almost felt like living in this European movie where we go have a lunch of, you know, fresh bread from the bakery with a little slice of cheese and some grapes and my kids playing in the park area. And, you know, it was a really wonderful life. I wasn't able to work when we were in Germany, and I only had one child at the time. And then my son was born there while we were there. And then my stepdaughter came and lived with us while we were there too. So I had children and wasn't working. So we explored. We went to castles and we went to fests and we went to see different markets and explored what the stores offered. And I was not very good about learning German. But thankfully, the German people were very good about knowing English. So it all worked out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you kind of get over the hurdle, though, of traveling with little, like you would have had to have young kids, especially if you gave birth there? Like a lot of people would say, oh, I have little, so I can't. What made you say you could?
That's a great question. Honestly, I've never said to myself, I can't travel because I have a small child. It's more like, how am I going to make this work with the small child? Because I'm going.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm just very fortunate in that my kids are good travelers, or maybe I made them good travelers because I insisted on them traveling. I don't know which one it is.
I think it's probably that one. My humble opinion in it.
So we would take long road trips and I think maybe just stopping often on the way and accommodating their needs, you know, knowing that when they're little, they need to get out and run. So if that means the side of the road's stop and there's a cornfield and they can go run in it for 5 minutes, then that's what you do, even if it's not a park or a normal rest stop you might see, you know, like a park or something like that. So we would just stop and we would run. And then, you know, I think maybe just my excitement for being there, maybe it rubbed off. I don't know. I don't have all the answers for that one. I know that that's hard, right? Like little, you have to pack a ton of extra stuff for littles. And we didn't do really long trips, like month long trips or anything. Mm-hmm. It was always a weekend here or maybe a week there. But we did get to travel the majority of Europe, and that was really amazing.
I love that, though, because it's like, that doesn't mean it was easy, that there weren't any bumps in the road, or
or any like hurdles to get over. It's just that you decided, I'm in Europe and I'm going to go see Europe. So what do I have to do? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because I feel like we have this choice, and I like to think of myself mostly as I'm going to go on the adventure, but I still, I'm not quite like you where I still feel the like, oh, but it, da, da, da.
There is sometimes some dread, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have my daughter's now turning into a teenager, and there's a little, sometimes some dread of, oh, good Lord, what is it going to be like for the next week with her on the road? Cause she's grumpy. But I think it's just, you know, you just have to insist. Sometimes people don't know what's best for them. And so when you push them into an uncomfortable situation and then they realize they love it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, maybe that's my philosophy for the travel portion of it. My kids are going to experience it whether they want to or not, because it's important for them to learn and to grow into wonderful human beings to have those experiences that are uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah. What do you love so much and get out of the travel and the cultural experiences like that?
I think a lot of it is just the people that I meet and then how unique each of them are and what they do and what they love. When we were in Africa, the job that I had at the embassy was for PEPFAR, which is the presidential plan for AIDS relief, is basically what it is. So I ran a small grants program and had 12 grantee programs that were all over Uganda that were invested in helping their community with either people who were infected or affected by AIDS and the HIV virus. So my job ended up being traveling to these very small remote communities in the middle of nowhere and in going to see their program and talking to the people that they had worked with and seeing the kind of change it had brought within their community. So, I mean, that right there was 2 years of like amazing experience after experience. And I got to do things I never thought I would do. One was a beekeeping program where they were teaching people how to keep bees and make honey to earn a living. And I put on a beekeeper suit and I'm smoking the beehive and I'm out there surround covered in bees. And I'm thinking, what the heck am I doing? You know?
That's so cool.
Yes. Yeah. And there was a lot. There was a lot of experiences like that. And just seeing as I would go out to those communities in Africa, especially when I would go to those communities and knowing that I was going to see a program where there were people that had been, their lives had been severely affected by something that was very tragic, and still seeing them making an effort to do their best at whatever it was that they were doing. I loved that. So it was a little different in Europe. There wasn't so much tragedy in Europe. It was more the history and the different cultures and what they loved, you know, food in Italy and drink in Italy, I should say, both of those are very high. But in Switzerland, it was the nature and the outdoors. And, you know, we hiked through glaciers and went into caves and up mountaintops and skiing. And so it was just, it depended on where it was we were going and what really that culture appreciated most.
Mm-hmm. So with the theme of like soaking in the cultures you're around and being engaged in the community and like really taking advantage of the opportunity to be there, how do you go from doing that in Europe and Germany to like somewhere like you're at Fort Hood
Fort Hood, Texas
where I know right now it especially has like a bad rep in the news and stuff, but like it's the middle of Texas. That's not glaciers in Switzerland or the beautiful fields in Germany. Like how do you, or I guess, have you been able to still find the adventure and the culture and the appreciation for where you are and who you're surrounded by at a place like Fort Hood? And you know what I mean? Like, the moments when we're like, oh,
I will caveat this with when I heard we were coming to Fort Hood, I did cry.
Yeah.
It was on my like list of four duty stations I never wanted to be stationed at. You know, fingers crossed that the Army doesn't send us there. But now that I'm here, we're retiring here and we're staying in the area. So, yes, I'm going. So what I'm here's how I'm going to say, yes, you can absolutely find adventure when it's not someplace exotic. So you may not know that there are mammoths that lived in Texas and you can go see their bones. Cool. Just right up in Waco area, you know, 45 minutes away. And they have a dinosaur state park where they've got literal dinosaur footprints in rocks, you know, that are fossilized. And so there's still so many adventures. There's waterfalls. And part of it is I love to be outside and I love nature and I love camping and hiking and those kinds of things. So that makes it very easy to fall in love with someplace. Is when you go out and you explore what they have around. We live just a couple of miles and 20 minutes from a lake. You know, and last summer during the pandemic, my kids and I were out there every day from 9 a.m. until about 12 p.m. for the 3 hours of fun. And then you come home because it's 110 degrees here, which is not my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
But 110 degrees here. And then we come home and do our schoolwork and or my business work and be here at home for it. But it's just part of like telling yourself, I need to be proactive, get out and do something and find what it is about this location that I do love. If you're a foodie, then go find those small restaurants. If you like to dance, there's going to be a dance club someplace close by. If you love nature, there's no end of adventures you can find in national parks, state parks, hiking trails at your local community college. I mean, you just got to go searching for it. And I think sometimes we get to duty station, we're just like, oh, I can't believe I got stationed here. There's nothing to do. And it's that automatic decision that you're not going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I ended up at Fort Hood. But now, like I said, I like it here and we're staying, which is nothing I ever thought would come out of my mouth just a couple of years ago.
Well, especially since it was like, that was on your list of, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Now you're going to retire there. So in 16 years and you know, you listed off a number of places you've been, have you ever been to a place that you didn't grow to love or find adventure and like fun things to do in?
No. There are different individual tiny things about certain places. Like if you're at Fort Campbell and you go to Land Between the Lakes, I'm really sorry, but you're going to be covered in ticks when you come out of there. Like that just is part of living in that location. So did I love that? Absolutely not. But was I going to stay away just because of that? No, definitely not. So yeah, no, there hasn't been a single duty location that I have not loved. Even Fort Huachuca, which is in the middle of nowhere, Arizona.
Yeah.
We went to so many ghost towns.
Yeah, ghost towns. Yeah. That was going to be one of my next questions because Huachuca is like, so we've looked into it because we have family in the Mesa area.
Yeah.
My parents are in California. So we're like, well, we'd only be like 6 hours from my parents, which is way closer than 26 hours. And we'd only be like 2 or 3 hours from Mesa. We're big Diamondbacks baseball fans. So, you know, like,
yes,
there's something we could do, but we're like, okay, but on a daily basis, what would you do? But like, there's even ghost towns. Like,
yes, ghost towns. Tombstone isn't very far from there. What's the name? There's some little town. I can't remember the name of it. It evades me right now, but it's like this artsy fartsy little town. It's got a copper mine you can go and do a tour in, but it's got like weekly art walks and these posh little unique boutique restaurants and galleries, you know, if you like that kind of thing. And then Tucson's only an hour away,
mm-hmm.
But you're only 2 miles from like Mexico. Not that you're allowed to go there necessarily. Can't just cross the border by like climbing over the mountain.
Yeah.
But you're close to, you know, so many new places. Yeah, I highly recommend it. Huachuca was a good adventure for us.
How do you, or how have you like found out about the adventures? Because like, I feel like it's easy to just say, oh, we're going to Huachuca or wherever it is and be like, well, it's not Tucson. And like, you know, it's easy to hear about or know things in that are fun in the major cities.
Yeah.
How have you found out about the adventures and the cool little quirks of each little base?
I think probably I would say because I asked the locals. It's okay. Not so other military families, sometimes they'll have the answers, but more often than not, it's the local people that will say, oh, I've been here forever. You should go hike this place. There's a hidden spring back there that you can skinny dip in if you feel like it. You know, so they're the ones who I plead the fifth.
We don't have to take confessions. Yeah. I just had to ask.
But that's an option when you know a local and they know about the spring that's hidden away. So So I think it just, if you ask the people, lots of times I ask the librarians, the local librarians, a lot of times they've been there for, you know, 50 years and they're 50 years before that. And then of course they always have their tourist things that you should look up on their city or county websites. But it's the people that have lived there the longest that are going to be able to tell you where to go, where the adventures really are going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine has, or at least so far, and maybe it's just because I grew up in a family of dentists, so I'm like comfortable. I'm oddly comfortable at the dentist office. But it's always like the receptionist at the dental office, like the one that's a little bit older, not the new girl, but the one that, like, she's a local, she's been here for a while. That's where we've gotten the best food recommendations, the best sites to see.
Yes.
We got a librarian, though. That's a good one.
Yeah, librarians are good. I mean, it's whatever you can find. I mean, it's hard to ask, like, the grocery checkout girl, hey, what's your favorite place around here to go visit? So it's the people that are, you know, where they're maybe in a job that they've been established in for a while, that have been around for a while, and they almost always have something. If they haven't been there, their friend's friend has been there, you know, and once you find something that sparks your interest, no matter what it is, you know, or they'll tell you, hey, don't miss out on this local festival or party or carnival that we have every year. That's another big one, because you never know until you get to a town what their big event is every year. And sometimes those are really fun and different and unique. And you're like, what in the world is going on here? But it's a good adventure.
It's a big deal, but it's cool.
Exactly. Like, why are we bowing down to cherries? I don't understand this whole cherry festival that I'm involved in, where people are dressed like cherries and eating cherries and cherry jam and cherry pie. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Like, where was cherry? Is that a true story?
No, that one was made up. I should have done the cherry one.
Now I want to start a cherry festival. That sounds like something that would happen on like Gilmore Girls in that small town.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? So I love the Gilmore Girls because wasn't there just such a good feeling in that town? And I feel like that's what I'm looking for everywhere I go, is that kind of community feeling.
Yeah.
No matter where I'm at.
They just have fun with everything. They have fun with Thanksgiving. They have fun with, yeah.
Yeah.
We should just, military spouses could create that community.
Yeah, we totally. We just call it Gilmore Girl Land. And nobody that doesn't watch the show or love it can be in there. You got to watch the show, then you can come visit.
Yep. So, last question, what's your key to thriving that you want to share with your fellow waiting warriors?
Well, I would say after our conversation here that being proactive about getting out and doing things and not worrying so much about whether or not you're going to like it, just mm-hmm. trying it out and making sure that you just take time to try to love a place before you decide automatically it's not what you want. So, but as far as like life in general, I mean, I think that applies to it. So proactivity, invest in yourself, and military life can be it can bog you down really, really deeply. And so as long as you're able to kind of wade your way through that and remember that you are a unique individual that loves unique things, you don't have to love everything military. You don't have to only be friends with military. You don't have to only be within your military community. You will find so many new adventures and wonderful things out there to explore.
Yeah, I love it. And just like with the traveling theme, military life presents such a unique opportunity. And I'm about to have kid number 5. I know it is hard to take on those adventures, but I also know how much benefit there is for me and for my kids. And then just like watching your face, like if you're watching on YouTube, like you've seen Anna's face light up. I think you can hear it in her voice, like talking about Uganda and Germany, but then also Huachuca. Like, you know, like there are adventures in life out there for us if we're willing to not only like take the opportunity, but I think you chose proactive.
Yeah.
Really smartly. That's not the right word, but you guys know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, you have to be proactive about it. If you sit around waiting for adventure or fun or waiting for something great to happen in Fort Hood, I'm sorry, it's not going to be there. If you're coming this direction, I'm really sorry. But if you sit around waiting for adventure, Fort Hood is not the place you're going to find it. But if you go seeking it, there are so many great places around here to explore and find, and really cool people and great restaurants. And, you know, I love our local librarian. So it's one of my favorite places to go. Yeah. So you'll find things that you love about it. So when you leave there, then you shed tears and you say, I'm sad to be leaving here, but on to my next adventure, my next PCS.
Let's go find the next librarian.
That's right. I love librarians. I should have just been one. Maybe I will be one. Who knows?
Yeah, life's not over.
Right.
You got plenty of time.
Right. And it'll be my retiree job. I'd be like, I just want to be a librarian.
Yeah. That's a good one. Especially if you're just like you are the adventure woman. So you'll be like, as you're checking this book out, did you know that there is a spring and a waterfall where you can go?
I have as yet to find a hidden spring here in Texas. I know that they exist, but I'm a little afraid of rattlesnakes sometimes. And so hiking through the backwoods, rattlesnakes are not my favorite thing. Not prepared for that yet. I need to get myself
delivering for a book about how to keep rattlesnakes away. Step one.
Right.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. If somebody wants to connect with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Well, so you can always visit my website, which is www.nomadabout.com. And that's for copywriting, social media strategy, marketing strategies, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Or I'm on social media, Instagram and Facebook at I Am Nomadabout. And you can find me there or connect with me on LinkedIn if you're wanting a more professional connection.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. I just want to send you like a DM about like, okay, what was your favorite adventure? Here was.
I would tell you, just send me a DM. I'll be like, okay, when you go, this is what you have to do.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Anna. And Lady Warriors, remember, just because it's hard doesn't mean it has to be miserable. Have a good week, guys.
Hey, Waiting Warriors, if you are in the middle of a deployment, heading into one, or shoot, you're just a military spouse who wants to like get ahead of the deployment game, I have created a free resource just for you. It's a PDF file called 3 Ways to Set Up Your Marriage for a Successful Deployment. It is 3 quick things that you can do with your spouse that I've done with mine that really helped us through our number of separations. If you're watching on YouTube, there will be a link just in the caption. You can go to my website, thewaitingwarriors.com, and there's a yellow link with it on the top right, or you can go to subscribepage.com/3, like the number 3, ways to set up your marriage for a successful deployment. Okay? There will be a link in the bio in the show notes if you need it. Go check that out. Please take care of yourself. Take care of your marriage. Be intentional and let me help you through this.